Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here's your host, Adam Pfeiffer.
Happy Friday. Welcome back, everybody, to the FTN DataCast. Presented, of course, by FTN Fantasy. Adam Pfeiffer here for week number 8. Already week 8 here, the read option episode of the FTN DataCast. Week 8 kicked off on Thursday with my Bills still not looking like the AFC perennial powerhouse that we expected, but they got the win. Dalton Kincaid with the breakout performance. We love to see that. But no teams on bye here in week number 8, so a lot to talk about. Again, the read option is up. It is live at FTN Fantasy. All 15 or 16 games, I should say. We'll talk about 15 today on the podcast. And we talk about it every single week. It's a perfect combination if you, you know, whether you like to consume content either, you know, in terms of reading, in terms of listening to a podcast, we have you covered with every game over at ftnfantasy.com. Also, basketball season started. I'll be contributing a lot of basketball content, which I love. It's, you know, it's right up there with football. It's, you know, I absolutely love it. I love the NBA content team we have, led by, of course, Zach Graham, who I believe I'll be on stream with him on Monday for the first time this season. You know, one of my favorite things to do is talk about basketball with Zach and everybody at FTN Fantasy and FTN Daily for NBA. So make sure you check out all the content we have. We will be having a great season. I can guarantee that. But let's get to week number 8, starting with the Carolina Panthers at home against the Houston Texans. CJ Stroud for me is a borderline quarterback one here. He's been pretty good for most of the season. He's been a quarterback one in fantasy 4 of 6 games. I think he makes it a fifth here against Carolina. Panthers banged up on defense, 6 most yards per pass attempt allowed, 2nd highest passing touchdown rate at almost 6%. So I like Stroud. Then you have the backfield, which Houston was on bye in week 7, so we didn't get to see them. But back in week 6, I don't know if it was a one-game sample and something that's not going to continue, but we saw Devin Singletary season high 52% of the snaps, handled a season high 40% of the Texans' rush attempts. He had 12 carries for 58 yards while Damian Pierce continued to struggle. He had 13 carries for 34 yards. This is interesting because the matchup is really good. Carolina, they've been so bad against the run. 14% of the runs against the Panthers have gained 10-plus yards. It's the 4th highest rate in football. They're also allowing the 3rd most yards before contact per attempt at 1.97. So that's a great sign for Damian Pierce, who's been getting nothing before contact this season. 0.67 yards before contact per attempt is one of the lowest marks in the league. But he also hasn't reached the 60% snap share mark in any game this season. And there's a slight chance that we see Devin Singletary take some work away from him again. So there's upside for Damian Pierce here. But I have him as a risky running back too. And I will say Devin Singletary, not getting a ton of buzz in terms of a player to add off waivers, but I would add him if he's out there, especially if you're desperate or hurting at all at running back. At wide receiver, Nico Collins is still on the wide receiver 2 radar for me. He's been a little bit up and down this season, but he's at least a top 25 play. Carolina, 9th most fantasy points per game to opposing wide receivers from the left side of the field at 13. Collins lines up there about 45% of the time. Carolina's also really struggled against wide receiver ones over the past couple weeks, so I like Collins. And then Tank Dell, he's playing, like, it'll be interesting to see what the wide receivers look like here, because Tank Dell didn't play in week 6. Noah Brown was back in the lineup, and he went back to that slot role. He was a starting slot receiver before he got hurt in week 1. Robert Woods might not play, so I think the lineup is Collins and Tank Dell, who Tank Dell, by the way, 70% of the time he's been out wide. So I think we see Collins and Dell on the outside with Noah Brown in the slot. And Tank Dell's return, it could hurt Dalton Schultz. Schultz over the past couple weeks, 25% target share the last 3 weeks, way up from what it looked like to start the season. His route participation has still kind of been all over the place, but he's a low-end tight end one, but I do think he's hurt a little bit by the return of Tank Dell. For Carolina, I mean, the backfield, this could also be a committee. Frank Reich pretty much said as much. Chuba Hubbard's been just overall better than Miles Sanders. So nothing more than flex plays right now. And then you're starting Adam Thielen, who has been the wide receiver one on a points per game basis since week two. During that span, he's averaging 11.4 targets, 9.4 receptions, and almost 100 receiving yards per game with a 32% target share. So I don't know how you're benching Adam Thielen with, I mean, he's been the first read on like 80% of his targets. Like, this offense is pretty much broken to the point where all of the plays are being designed for 32-year-old Adam Thielen. Rams at Cowboys up next. I was off on Stafford last week. I thought it would be a massive game from him and a massive volume game with the injuries to the Rams backfield. But again, Stafford just 29 passes, giving him fewer than 30 in each of his last two games. He's thrown for one touchdown pass or fewer in every game but one this season. 2.7% passing touchdown rate is 25th in the league. Now he faces a tough Dallas defense. I don't really love Stafford this week. And then we saw what the backfield looked like. I was very hesitant on Zach Evans last week. I thought he was like one of the worst plays you could ask. And it's tough because you added him off waivers and you think, okay, I have a running back I can start. But just the way, you know, again, I wasn't as high on Evans as a prospect, but then the way that Sean McVay was talking up Daryl Henderson and Royce Freeman in pass pro against, you know, a team that had TJ Watt last week, like, it just didn't set up a good spot for Evans, who played, what, zero snaps in offense. Daryl Henderson led the way with a 58% snap share and handled 60% of the team's rushing attempts, 19 touches, 66 yards, and a touchdown. Royce Freeman played 42% of the snaps and had 12 carries for 66 yards. I think it's probably going to continue to be like a 60-40, 65-45 type split in favor of Henderson, who played all the snaps in the two-minute drill and the goal line snaps, although Freeman and Henderson did split work on third downs. I have Henderson as a flex play. Again, no teams on bye this week, so you don't have to start Daryl Henderson. And then you're starting Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, obviously. You know, since Cooper Kupp's debut in week five, Puka Nacua has a 35% target share. So it's not like he's gone from the clear wide receiver one to like a 15 to 20% target share. Now, he's still getting elite volume. And this is such a concentrated offense. Since that span, both these wide receivers have accounted for like 80% of the team's receiving yards. So you're starting both. For Dallas, I'm okay with Dak here as a potential low-end quarterback one, high-end quarterback two. We saw him have his best game this season a couple weeks ago against the Chargers. 40 rushing yards and a touchdown on the ground. The Cowboys, I think it was McCarthy or Schottenheimer, talked about the importance and the added benefit of Dak's rushing, which appears to be back. And the Rams are allowing 26.3 rushing yards per game to opposing quarterbacks. That's the fourth most in the league. So I kind of like Dak here at home. Tony Pollard's been a little bit underwhelming. You're still starting him, though. He is second among all running backs in expected fantasy points, according to FTN's expected fantasy points tool. The volume's been great. He's averaging 20 touches per game. He has 94% of the team snaps in the two-minute drill, 17 rushing attempts from inside the 10-yard line, third most in the NFL. It's just the efficiency hasn't quite been there because, A, he's getting more volume, so it was naturally going to go down anyway. But also, the Cowboys keep running him up the middle. It's kind of frustrating. But still, 69.2% of the touchdowns scored against the Rams this season have come on the ground. That's the highest rate in the NFL. They're also allowing the ninth most yards before contact per rush attempts. So you're starting Pollard. CeeDee Lamb's also been a little bit disappointing. 22% target share puts him outside the top 30 wide receivers in the NFL. His target share last year was almost 29%, so there's definitely a drop-off. Overall, there's been a lot less creativity in Mike McCarthy's offense. Way less pre-snap motion. CeeDee Lamb led the NFL in receptions and targets out of pre-snap motion last year. He's not even close this year. He's 27th among all players, or among all wide receivers, in snaps in pre-snap motion. So the usage isn't as exciting and, you know, versatile as it was with Kellen Moore. But I'm still starting CeeDee Lamb, but he's quickly becoming more of a wide receiver too than a top 12 wide receiver. And I like Jake Ferguson here as a low-end tight end one. Only four total targets the last two games, but the good news is he's now set season highs in route participation each of the last two games at 73 and then 84%. His 85% snap share in week six was also a season high. And he continues to see high-value targets. Fourth in the league with six targets from inside the 10. He has almost 30% of Dallas' targets from inside the red zone. And the Rams, they're allowing the sixth most fantasy points, fifth most receiving yards per game to opposing tight ends this season. So I like the spot for a potential bounce back opportunity for Jake Ferguson. NFC North showdown here between the Vikings and Green Bay Packers. You know, despite missing Justin Jefferson and playing in primetime and facing a tough defense, Kirk Cousins got it done last week against San Fran. 378 and two touchdowns. And they continue to throw the ball a lot. I mean, in the two games without Jefferson, the Vikings are still eighth in the league in neutral script pass rate. Cousins has attempted 44 passes or more in 5 of 7 games. This isn't the greatest matchup, but the volume alone should have Cousins as at worst a high-end quarterback too. You're starting Jordan Addison. He's a must-start player for me. Had his breakout last week against San Fran. Since Jefferson's been out, Addison has handled 67% of the team's end zone targets, 67%, and almost 40% of their air yards over the past 2 weeks. He's tied for fourth among all wide receivers with 6 end zone targets, so I'm starting him. The backfield, though, week 6 looked like Alexander Mattison didn't look like he was going to lose his job or anything, right? He dominated. And Cam Akers was not much of a factor. That changed in week 7, where Mattison played 56% of the snaps, his second lowest rate in a game this season, and only 38% of the team's rushing attempts went to Mattison, his lowest rate. Akers, meanwhile, 48% of the rushing attempts, he had 12 touches, he was the running back they went to late in the game. So we know Mattison hasn't been efficient to start with. And if he's losing touches, that's a recipe for disaster. This team is throwing the ball 70.6% of the time when they reach the red zone. It's the highest rate in the league. Mattison has the most carries among all players without a rushing touchdown this season. As of right now, I still have Mattison as like a volume-based, low-end running back too. But there's risk here. The Packers are a good matchup. They allow 2.45 yards after contact per attempt, the 5th most in the NFL, and the 3rd most rushing yards per game at almost 144. But there's definitely some concern that Mattison and this becomes more of a 50-50 split or even worse. So, and a tight end you're starting TJ Hockenson, as long as he's healthy, was on the injury report with a foot, but he has 8-plus targets in 13 of 17 games since joining Minnesota. So just keep an eye on his status, but obviously, you know, he has a 26% target share in the 2 games without Jefferson. You're starting him if he's active. Green Bay, I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't feel great about anybody. Jordan Love's been terrible. His fantasy points that he got to start the season were kind of fluky. And Minnesota's been really good on defense lately. We know that this team is going to blitz a lot with Brian Flores. They blitz right now 56% of the time. It's easily the highest rate in the NFL. And Jordan Love is completing just 54.8% of his passes against the blitz. I'm out on Jordan Love. And, like, I want to say you should start Aaron Jones, but he is still not even close to 100%. Last week, he only played 34% of snaps. A.J. Dillon played 57% of snaps and had 56% of the team's rushing attempts. Dillon played on 7 of the 11 third downs. Like, I don't really love, like, I'm almost at the point now. You know, Jones didn't practice on Wednesday. He hasn't had a full practice in seemingly months. And the Vikings, 31.9% of the yardage against them has come on the ground. It's one of the top 10 rates in the league, or 10 lowest rates in the league. 6 fewest yards before contact per attempt. 6 fewest fantasy points per game to running backs. Like, Aaron Jones is a very risky running back, too, if he plays. And I'm not, like, Christian Watson's a boom-bust wide receiver 3. He's not getting, you know, massive targets. He still handled about 46% of the Green Bay's air yards in the 2 games he's played the majority of the snaps. And then, like, Romeo Doubs has the most end zone targets in the NFL with 8, but his target share has come down since Christian Watson's been, you know, fully acclimated. And then, like, I kind of like the spot for Jayden Reed as, like, a sneaky DFS play, really, really deep league player. The problem is, since Green Bay has had Christian Watson back, they are barely playing 11 personnel. Overall, they're middle of the pack in 11 personnel usage. So Jayden Reed is playing in the slot 75% of the time. He's only getting on the field when they're in 11, pretty much. I will say, though, that the Vikings are allowing the 2nd most receptions, 5th most yards, and 4th most fantasy points per game to opposing pass catchers lined up in the slot. Okay, moving on. We have the Saints and Colts. I mean, anytime you have a Colts game, you have to be interested. I mean, they're playing at the fastest pace in the NFL. Pretty much all of their games are hitting the over. I mean, we saw that crazy game between Indianapolis and Cleveland last week. So you have to have interest in a lot of these Colts games. Does that mean you have to have interest in Derek Carr? I don't know. He's been pretty bad, but the matchup's really good. 50 pass attempts or more in two straight. The red zone woes continue for the Saints, though. Derek Carr has completed just 40% of his passes from inside the 20-yard line, the second worst rate in the league, and he's completing 3 of 17 passes from inside the 10. That's the worst rate easily in the league. There's no real scheme in this offense, right? It's either throw the ball 20 yards down the field to Chris Olave or Rashid Shaheed, or check it down to Alvin Kamara. Derek Carr, according to FTN data, 60 checkdowns this season, the most in the NFL. The next closest quarterback in terms of checkdowns is Kirk Cousins with 39. Now, again, the matchup is really good. The Colts, 10th highest red zone touchdown percentage allowed this season at 62%. Carr has been better against zone coverage this season, completing 69.4% of his passes. So I think this could be a good game for Carr, but it's hard to have a lot of faith. Obviously, you're starting Alvin Kamara, who, again, with Carr leading the NFL in checkdowns, Kamara has just been a monster in terms of PPR. 35 receptions, the most among running backs despite missing three games. Since week four, he has a 24% target share. He's averaging 26 touches per game. The Colts play a lot of cover three. They like to keep everything in front of them, so this could be another game where we just see a bunch of checkdowns to Alvin Kamara. Frustrating game from Chris Olave last week. Like, if you told me that he was going to have 15 targets against Jacksonville, I would have guessed he would have been like a top seven, top eight wide receiver on the week. But he and Carr couldn't get on the same page, and he ended up catching just 7 of those 15 targets for 57 yards. His target share is down to 21% since Kamara has returned. It was 30% before Kamara. There's still just so much upside to bench him, though. He leads the NFL with 19 deep targets. The Colts have allowed 7 different receivers to finish as a top 28 option against them, 6 to finish inside the top 20, and they've allowed 4 different 100-yard games. Michael Thomas remains like a low ceiling wide receiver 3. Did score last week, but 1.3 yards after the catch per reception, not doing much. Again, though, the Colts are just so bad against wide receivers. And then at tight end, like, Juwan Johnson has been out the past couple weeks. So we've actually seen Taysom Hill over the past 2 weeks lead or rank second among all tight ends with 75 routes. 11 catches on 13 targets in the span, averaging 8.4 opportunities per game. If Juwan Johnson plays, it adds way more risk. But if he's out again, like, Taysom Hill can probably be trusted as a borderline tight end one. For the Colts, Minshew is a quarterback two in Superflex if you need him. He bounced back in a huge way against Cleveland's defense last week. The scheme and everything is fantasy friendly with how fast the Colts play. I like their skill position players enough. And the Saints, they're good against quarterbacks, but they do play more man than pretty much anybody. And that's where you get a lot of rushing production for quarterbacks. So it wouldn't surprise me if Minshew had like 30 to 45 rushing yards and maybe a touchdown again on the ground. At running back, Jonathan Taylor, still kind of a split, but he's playing more and more each week. Last week he set season highs in snap share at 49% and rush share at 50%. He had 21 touches for 120 yards and a touchdown. Saints have been a slightly above average run defense, but I'm still starting Jonathan Taylor as a running back too. And then at wide receiver, I love Josh Downs here. Absolutely love him. Caught 5 of 6 targets for 125 yards and a score last week. He's now finished as a top 30 fantasy wideout in each of his last 3 games, and I think he does it again here. Downs has played 5 games this season where Minshew has played at least 30 snaps on offense. In those games, he's averaging 7.4 targets, 5.6 receptions, 67.4 receiving yards, and 14.4 PPR points per game. He's playing out of the slot 83% of the time, which makes this the better spot for him. The Saints are allowing the second most receiving yards to slot receivers this season. Christian Kirk just got them for 6 for 90 and a touchdown. Robert Woods scored against him a couple weeks ago. They're also allowing 9 targets per game to pass catchers from the slot. And when facing man coverage this season, Downs has a solid 21% target share. I have him as a top 30 receiver this week. I would play him over Michael Pittman, who is still a fine play, made his day with that 75-yard touchdown. Maybe there's a squeaky wheel thing here because he was complaining about his targets after the game. But I do prefer Downs in this matchup, given what we've seen from the Saints' defense and how they allow more production to the slot. Going to the AFC East, we have the Patriots at the Dolphins. Not much for New England. Mac Jones did play his best game this season last week. Miami could have Xavier Howard and Jalen Ramsey in the secondary for the first time all season. They do allow the 6 most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks. Like, Mac Jones is a fine quarterback too in Superflex, nothing more. Ramondre Stevenson, I mean, Zeke scored last week, but Stevenson's still dominating most of the work. And, like, yes, Elliott has scored goal line touchdowns in back-to-back games. But I'm hesitant to say that he is the unquestioned goal line running back, because on the two drives he scored touchdowns, he happened to be in the game. It wasn't like Stevenson was driving, was on the field, and then he was pulled out of the game for Elliott. Over the course of the season, though, Stevenson still at 66% of the snaps, 53% of the rushing attempts, and almost 73% of the snaps on third downs. And the passing game usage has come back, 11 catches over the past 2 weeks, so I'm still fine with Stevenson. And Kendrick Bourne, last 3 weeks, he's run a route on at least 90% of dropbacks every game. Hopefully, it doesn't go down if Juju Smith-Schuster's back. But Kendrick Bourne, during that span, since week 5, a 26% target share. I am as a solid wide receiver 3. And, I mean, for Miami, you know you're starting Tyreek Hill, who should be good to go. Missed practice Wednesday with the hip, but it doesn't seem to be anything serious. It is interesting, though, with this matchup, because when these teams played back in week 2, the Patriots just played a lot of zone, which is different for them because they usually play as much man as almost anybody in the NFL. But they didn't want to give up the explosive passing plays to Tyreek Hill, to Jalen Waddle. So they played a lot of zone. And it's, again, like, you can't play man against Tyreek Hill because he has a 38% target share and he's averages almost 3 fantasy points per target against man. So we saw way more zone coverage in that game. As a result, Raheem Mostert, they were saying, you know what? If you run the ball against us, so be it. And Mostert had 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. He only saw a stack box on 11% of carries in that game. So I wonder if the Patriots have a similar approach this time around and not wanting to play man and not loading the box against Mostert. And it's been frustrating for Jalen Waddle, but you know, he still has too much upside to bench, honestly, unless you're completely loaded at wide receiver. Jets and Giants up next. This game's also pretty easy. As of this recording, we still don't know if Daniel Jones will be back. For the Giants' offensive sake, I hope Tyrod starts again. He's just been more productive. The pass catchers have been more productive. Darren Waller with Tyrod Taylor under center has been way more productive. So, like, Daniel Jones, I don't think he's been cleared for contact just yet. And, like, I'm not starting Tyrod against the Jets, especially with Sauce and especially with DJ Reed back. But Darren Waller, fantasy's tight end 3 since week 5. He is tied for 3rd among tight ends with a 23% target share. He had his breakout game last week. And this season with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, Darren Waller has a 26% target share. And the Jets, this is a defense we've talked about. They funnel production to tight ends. So far this season, they're allowing the most fantasy points, 8th most targets, and most touchdowns per game to opposing tight ends. And we've seen Dallas Goedert, Adam Trautman, Blake Bell all score against him the past couple weeks. And if you have Sauce and DJ Reed back, these outside wide receivers for the Giants are going to struggle. And the offense, like, Darren Waller could just get 12 targets in this game. So you're starting Waller, you're starting Barkley, who in 2 games since returning from the high ankle sprain is averaging 26 touches per game. He's played 82% of snaps and handled 78% of the Giants' rushing attempts during that span. And then for the Jets, it's Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall, right? I mean, Garrett Wilson, 32% target share, 46% of the team's air yards. He has the highest target share against the Blitz this season at 53.8%. He has 54% of the team's targets when the Jets are being blitzed. And the Giants blitz at the second highest rate in football at 38%. They also play man 36% of the time. And oh, by the way, Garrett Wilson, 40% target share against man coverage. So I like him a lot. Zach Wilson's been playing good enough to get Garrett Wilson a lot of production. And then Breece Hall, last 2 games, 60% of the snaps, 70% of the team's rushing attempts, 21 touches per game. Giants, meanwhile, they are a bad run defense, allowing 10 plus yards on 15% of the carries, second highest rate in the NFL. 1.97 yards before contact per attempt, tied for the worst mark, third worst mark, I should say, in the league. So he's an elite play, and the second half breakout will continue for Breece Hall. Moving along, we have Jacksonville and the Steelers. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is playing pretty good football, but it hasn't translated to these massive fantasy games. He's 19th among quarterbacks in fantasy points per dropback. He only has three top 12 finishes. The red zone's kind of been a problem for him, too. He's only had a 47% completion rate there. He's fine. I mean, the rushing production has been saving him. He had 60 rushing yards last week despite being less than 100% healthy. He's averaging almost 30 rushing yards per game this season. Steelers also a defense that plays a lot of man, so it wouldn't surprise me to see him take off and run a little bit again here. I have Lawrence as a, you know, borderline QB1, more of a QB2 probably. You're starting Travis Etienne, 21.5 touches per game. He has a carry or a target on 35% of his snaps, one of the highest rates in the NFL. He has finished as a top 8 fantasy running back 5 times this season, and the Steelers' run defense has not been the same without Cam Hayward. They allow the most yards after contact per attempt at 3.13. The wide receivers are interesting here. I mean, Christian Kirk has been operating as the wide receiver 1. Since week 2, he leads the team with a 26% target share, while Calvin Ridley's at 18%. During that same span, Ridley's been targeted on just 16% of his routes, 22% for Christian Kirk. Again, he's getting more of the schemed layup targets in pre-snap motion, in the slot, against linebackers. Remember, last season, Christian Kirk was top 5 among all wideouts in targets and routes run against linebackers. Like, he's getting the higher upside, you know, easily converted targets. I mean, this season, he is, I think, top 7 in the NFL in snaps in pre-snap motion among wide receivers. And I like him again here. He's been good against man coverage, 25% target share, top 10 among all wideouts and fantasy points per target at 2.2 against man coverage. He also leads the team with a 25.5% target share against the blitz. The Steelers, meanwhile, they're top 10 in both man coverage and blitz rate this season. So I love Kirk again. And I hope this is the bounce back game for Calvin Ridley, because he struggled against press man coverage for sure. That's why I did not like him at all last week against the Saints, and he had one catch for 5 yards. There's been way more of just like go run routes down the field and rely on kind of back shoulder throws and not scheme targets. The matchup is really good though. Pittsburgh's allowing 77.1 receiving yards per game to opposing number 2 wide receivers, the most in the NFL. And they're allowing 17 fantasy points per game to wideouts on the left side of the field. That's the second most. That bodes well for Calvin Ridley, who's lined up on the left side about 40% of the time. And we just saw what Puka Nacua did to this defense last week. So Ridley's more of a high-end wide receiver 3 for me right now, but he has legitimate top 15 upside in this spot. And again, I talk about it all the time, but the weekly floor that you are getting from Evan Ingram is awesome. He has at least 5 catches for 40 yards in all but one game this season. He's third among all tight ends in routes run. And only Dallas Goedert has run a route on a higher percentage of teams' dropbacks than Ingram at 86%. You're starting him. For Pittsburgh, I mean, Najee Harris and Jalen Warren are still flex plays at best. Coming out of the bye, Harris actually had his most touches in the game since week 2 with 17. Both players scored, but Jalen Warren had a season low 7 touches. And like with Deontay Johnson back, the targets predictably came down a little bit. So, I don't know. They're touchdown-dependent flex plays. And I do like both receivers here, though. We have to keep an eye on Deontay Johnson. He did not practice on Wednesday, I believe, with a hamstring. I don't know if it was a situation where they kind of just rested him. It was Wednesday or Thursday. I think it was Thursday. I don't know if it was a situation where they were kind of just resting him. And, you know, with his first, after coming back from, you know, his first game back from the injury. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on, because we know George Pickens was pretty much a weekly low-end wide receiver 2 without Deontay Johnson. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. And I saw 20 minutes ago that Deontay Johnson said he will play in this game. So Johnson ran around on 86% of his dropbacks in his first game back, 79 yards on 6 targets. Obviously didn't score because why would he? Good matchup here, though. I think both wide receivers are on the wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 borderline. Falcons at Titans. This game is gross. Both teams want to run the football. Both teams are going to play slow. We have the situation with the Titans quarterbacks where if Tannehill's out, Will Levis will probably start, and they'll probably apparently play both Levis and Malik Willis throughout the game. I'm starting Derrick Henry from the Titans, and that's it. Simple as that. This could be Derrick Henry's last game on the Titans. So, I mean, he's been pretty game script proof. We've seen Tajay Spears play a lot this season, and Spears has played 84.5% of Tennessee's third downs. It's one of the highest rates among all running backs. But hopefully, especially without Tannehill, the Titans can keep this game close enough for Henry to get, you know, 18 to 20 carries. And like Spears is like a desperation flex play. He's averaging like 8.5 targets or touches per game this season. But you obviously want the Titans to be trailing by a lot if you even consider Tajay Spears or Tajay Sharp or Tajay Spears, whatever I said. For the Falcons, yeah, I mean, Bijan Robinson had a headache last week. Everybody that played fantasy football has a headache with Arthur Smith. Robinson should be back to his usual role. He only played 10 offensive snaps last week. So it was frustrating because nobody knew what was happening. Nobody saw it coming, but I still wouldn't get away from Bijan here despite the tough matchup. This team still targets running back position 22.4% of the time. Robinson dominating the third down snaps. You'd like to see him get involved in the red zone at all, but it's been Desmond Ridder and it's been Tyler Algier getting a lot of the short yardage carries. Drake London, high upside wide receiver 3, borderline low end wide receiver 2. Much more consistency from him lately. Over the past 3 weeks, he's averaged 7 receptions, 9.3 targets, and 85 receiving yards per game. He's been a top 24 fantasy wide receiver since week 2. 25% target share during that span. And he has a good matchup against the Titans, who are allowing 15.4 fantasy points per game to wideouts on the left side of the field. That's the third most. London has played on the left side about 50% of the time. Wide receivers on the outside continue to find success against the Titans. And London should see coverage from Christian Fulton, who's allowing a 78% catch rate and 16.4 yards per reception in coverage this season. And the Titans, or the Falcons rather, 37.4% of targets are going to tight ends, the highest rate in the NFL. So Kyle Pitts and Jonnu Smith are both like top 13, 14 plays at tight end each week with that usage. Eagles at Washington up next. Start Jalen Hurts. He had his best game of the season against them earlier this season. Opposing offenses are scoring points on 45% of drives against the Commanders, fourth highest rate in the league. Hurts has a rushing touchdown in 3 straight games, I believe. He'll smash here. DeAndre Swift, you're starting him as a, you know, low-end running back 1, high-end running back 2. Since week 2, he's averaging 20.8 touches per game with a 14% target share. Eagles' target share to running backs is up from 12% last year to almost 20% this season. So you're starting Swift, and then obviously a massive, massive just smash spot for A.J. Brown. Just, he's on a tear right now. Third player in NFL history to have at least 125 receiving yards in 5 consecutive games. Since week 3, he has a 34% target share, and he's being targeted on 28% of his routes. And now he gets the best matchup for his skill set and usage. I mean, the Commanders. 6 deep passing touchdowns allowed, most in the NFL. 622 passing yards on passes, 20-plus air yards down the field, most in the NFL. 16.6% of the yards, or the passes against Washington, have traveled 20-plus air yards. Second highest rate in the NFL. And A.J. Brown leads the NFL with a 49% air yardage share, and his 16 deep targets are the third most in the league when these teams met back in week 3 or 4, whatever it was, he had 9 catches for 175 yards and a pair of touchdowns. It's been frustrating for Devonta Smith, only a 19% target share since week 3. He's the wide receiver 49 in fantasy during that stretch. It's been frustrating, but he's still a really high upside wide receiver 3 against this awful Commander secondary that's allowing the second highest ADOT in the NFL at 9.7. And you're starting Dallas Goedert, who over the past 3 games is averaging 6 catches, 7.3 targets, and 80 receiving yards per game with 2 touchdowns in that span. A lot of design screen attempts for Goedert from the Eagles, and he's second among all tight ends with 10 screen targets on the season. And the Commanders against tight ends as of late have struggled. 4 for 43 in a touchdown to Kyle Pitts, 4 for 36 in a touchdown to Jonnu Smith, and then 7 for 91 and it's or 7 for 98 and a touchdown to Darren Waller last week. So they're struggling there. For the Commanders, it's really mostly Terry McLaurin here. 20 targets over the past 2 weeks, 81 and 90 receiving yards in that span. 78.3% of the yardage against the Eagles has come via the pass, is the highest rate in football. I don't love Brian Robinson here. Like, he has not played 60% of snaps in a game this season. Chris Rodriguez is starting to get some more opportunities. He had 7 carries last week. Like, Robinson scored against the Eagles in week 3 or 4, but he only averaged 3.4 yards per carry. Eagles allow the second fewest yards after contact per attempt. Like, and Robinson's only averaging 11.2 touches per game over his past 5. So, like, I'm not high on Robinson. You're not starting Jahan Dotson. And then Logan Thomas is like a high-end tight end 2. Matchup is solid enough, but yeah, I'm just not overly excited about the Commanders here. Cleveland at Seattle. Looks like P.J. Walker will start for Cleveland with Deshaun Watson dealing with the shoulder issue. Not starting Walker. The backfield is probably going to belong to Kareem Hunt and Pierre Strong. Jerome Ford dealing with an ankle injury. He probably doesn't play. I don't think Hunt has this like massive 20-plus touch role. Like, Pierre Strong played 17 of 28 snaps in the fourth quarter last week. Hunt was questionable going into that game, so maybe he was limited. But I envision like a 60-40 type of split here between Hunt and Pierre Strong. It's not ideal against Seattle's run defense. The Seahawks allow 0.98 yards before contact per attempt, second lowest in the league. 24% of the runs against Seattle have been stuffed at or behind the line of scrimmage. That's the 6th highest rate, so I have Kareem Hunt as a flex play. Amari Cooper is a wide receiver 3. Seattle's been much better against wide receivers as of late. Like, I don't know. Like, it's Elijah Moore had a season high in receiving yards with a grand total of 59. There's just been no ceiling with him. He does have a 21% target share. He is averaging 8.5 opportunities per game, whether it's, you know, carries or targets. Pre-snap motion 14% of the time. Seattle does allow the most fantasy points, receptions, and receiving yards per game to opposing pass catchers from the slot, which is where Elijah Moore lines up about 55% of the time. But he's a desperation flex, and right now it's his quarterback situation. Amari Cooper is a wide receiver 3. David Njoku is kind of interesting here. He's coming off season high in targets with 9. He's actually averaging 2 more targets per game with P.J. Walker under center than Deshaun Watson. And his 18% target share over the past 2 weeks is solid. But, like, and like Seattle's been good against tight ends, but they might be without Bobby Wagner for this game. So, I don't hate Njoku here. For Seattle, I don't love Geno Smith. Excuse me. I don't love Geno Smith here. Just hasn't been doing it this year. All right? 2 games with multiple touchdowns this season. It was his first last week since week 2. Seattle's receivers are kind of banged up right now. Cleveland's defense remains really, really good. Geno's been worse against man coverage, which is what the Browns are running more of this season. Top 5 in man coverage rate at 38%. Geno against zone, 80% completion rate. Against man, 53%. So Smith is a quarterback too. Got to keep an eye on Ken Walker too. Did not practice Wednesday or Thursday with a calf issue. Obviously, if he plays, you start him. Right? He's been amazing. He is averaging 20 touches per game, a carry or a target on 37% of his snaps. It's the 5th highest rate among all running backs. Leads all running backs in carries from inside the 5-yard line with 12, and he's handled 92% of Seattle's carries from that part of the field. If he doesn't play, and again, the matchup's terrible, Cleveland allows the fewest rushing yards before contact per attempt this season. But if he doesn't play, Zach Charbonnet pretty much gets that role. Probably see DJ Dallas play on third downs, but Charbonnet probably gets 18 to 20 touches, which would put him in the low-end RB2 territory. So, haven't seen updates yet from Walker. If he doesn't practice today, he's probably not going to play. If he's limited, it gives him a chance. And obviously, if he's full, he should be good to go. But keep an eye on that. Have to keep an eye on Tyler Lockett, too. He hasn't been practicing with a hamstring issue. Metcalf didn't play last week, but he expects to play. Metcalf has been better against man coverage. 28.6% target share against man, 16.3% against zone. And, like, we haven't seen a huge sample of Metcalf playing without Tyler Lockett. Since he's entered the NFL, there's been 2 games he's played without Lockett. But in those 2 contests, 10.5 targets and 6.5 receptions per game. JSN is interesting here. Because back in week 6, first game out of the bye for Seattle, they set season high in 11 personnel, 70% of the time. That was with Lockett and Metcalf playing. Last week, obviously, Metcalf didn't play, so JSN set season highs in targets and route participation. He had 7 targets, ran a route on 82% of dropbacks. 4 catches, 63 yards, and a touchdown. He would be a very viable wide receiver 3 if Lockett's out. I think there's a chance. Like, I don't think I would start him in a week with 0 buys, but I think there's still a chance that we once again see a lot more 11 personnel from Seattle, even if Lockett plays, because we saw that in week 6, fresh out of the bye week. So, again, we'll have to keep an eye on the status of Tyler Lockett. Obviously, if Lockett plays, he's not a slam dunk. He's not been good this season. He probably isn't 100%, and it's a tough matchup. But obviously, if he's out, it obviously, you know, propels JSN. Ravens at Cardinals up next. Lamar Jackson, you're starting him. He's the MVP of the NFL, simply put. He's the MVP of the NFL. Career high 71% completion rate, despite having the third highest yards per pass attempt in the NFL. Gets to face the Cardinals, who are allowing the fourth highest completion rate, third worst yards per pass attempt. Jackson against zone coverage this season, 82.2% completion rate, and he's completing 54% of his deep passes against zone. And of course, it gives you that weekly floor with the rushing, averaging 9.9 rushing attempts and 52 rushing yards per game. I also like Gus Edwards here. Despite facing Detroit's elite run defense last week, he was a top 7 running back in fantasy. Yes, the 80-yard catch and run helped, but still ran for 64 yards and a touchdown. His 64% rush share was his highest in the game this season, as Justice Hill only had 5 touches on Sunday. Since week 3, Gus is averaging 14.4 touches per game. The Cardinals, this is such a great matchup. They're allowing the 6th most yards before contact per attempt and the 4th most fantasy points per game to running back. So I like Gus Edwards, and I love Zay Flowers here. Absolutely love him. He's obviously been really, really busy so far in his rookie season. 27% target share. He has 33% of the Ravens' targets on 3rd or 4th down, and he's averaging nearly 8 targets per game. 77 plays in pre-snap motion are the 2nd most among all wide receivers behind Tutu Atwell of the Rams. Zone coverage, man, he has been fantastic. 31.1% target share against zone, the 7th highest rate in the league, and he's averaging almost 2 fantasy points per target against zone, up from 1.47 points per target against man. Cardinals, 64% of the time they're playing zone coverage, 10th highest in the league. They're also allowing the 6th most fantasy points and the 3rd most receiving yards per game to opposing wide receivers. Love that. And I kind of like Odell Beckham here as a GPP play in DFS. 7 targets last week. We'll probably see primary coverage from Marco Wilson, who's allowing the 4th most targets with 49, the 3rd most receptions with 39, and 3 touchdowns in coverage this season. And then, of course, you're starting Mark Andrews. Not in love with the Cardinals here. Like, Amari DiMarcado is a flex play. It was crazy that the change in usage. In week 6, you know, DiMarcado was mainly playing on 3rd downs and 2-minute drills, as Keontae Ingram led the team with 12 touches. But last week, everything changed. Ingram only played 9 snaps, all of which came on special teams. So it was literally only DiMarcado and Damian Williams. DiMarcado played 79% of the snaps and handled 17 of the 18 running back touches. So you love that. The Ravens have been a little bit more vulnerable against the run than the pass, and they allow the 8th most receiving yards per game to opposing running backs. So DiMarcado, who had a 16% target share last week, he's a flex play in PPR leagues. And Hollywood Brown, wide receiver 3, 27% target share, 44% of the team's air yardage this season is one of the highest rates in the NFL. Tough matchup against his former team, but you like the volume. Double-digit targets, I believe, in 5 of 7 games this season. Trey McBride is a fine streaming play. We know Zach Ertz will be on injured reserve. Tight ends have been really involved in this offense. We saw Ertz 3 games this season with a target share of at least 24%. And as a team, the Cardinals are targeting tight ends 31% of the time, 2nd highest rate in the NFL. McBride, he's been productive on a per-touch basis, per-route basis, right? 3rd among all tight ends in yards per route run this season at 1.87. Really tough matchup, but he's an okay streaming play if you picked him up this week. Chiefs at Broncos up next. You're starting Patrick Mahomes. Don't really have to say much. He had a vintage Mahomes game last week, 424 and 4 touchdowns. The rushing has been awesome too. I talk about it a lot. He's 2nd in the NFL in scrambles because the Chiefs wide receivers can't get a lot of separation consistently, can't get open a ton. So we're seeing Mahomes right now averaging career highs in carries per game at 4.7 and rushing yards per game at 30.6. You're starting him. You're starting Isaiah Pacheco, who has now scored a touchdown in, what, three straight games? Since week four, he's handled almost 70% of the team's rushing attempts, and he's averaging 19.7 touches per game. Denver, second most yards after contact allowed per attempt, and the fifth most yards before contact allowed per attempt, as well as the most fantasy points and third most rushing touchdowns per game to opposing running backs. Starting Travis Kelce, and then Rashee Rice, risky wide receiver four, but he has like top 20 upside if he's actually, you know, if he can actually get like an 80% route participation, wheels up, because he's being targeted on 29% of his routes this season. He's been the lone Chiefs wide receiver that can get consistent targets, but his route participation has been all over the place. Although I will say, last week, he ran around on 65% of dropbacks. That was his highest rate this season. So maybe that's a sign of things to come. Outside of Courtland Sutton and Javonte Williams, I'm not really high on Denver here. Javonte, in week six, he made his return, was limited, played 35% of the snaps, handled 50% of the rushing attempts, but saw an expanded role last week against Green Bay. He played 53% of the snaps, and he handled 63% of Denver's rushing attempts. And then he set season highs in rushing yards and touches with 18. So he out-touched Jaleel McLaughlin 18-6. Samaje Perine still played all five of the snaps in the two-minute drill, but like if the Broncos can keep this game close for long enough, Williams can get 15 to 17 touches and be productive against a team that is allowing the eighth most yards after contact per attempt. So I have Williams as like in the running back 23 to 25 range, but he has top 15 upside if this game can stay close for long enough. And yeah, like I wasn't really high on Courtland Sutton, but he's been productive. He scored in five games this season. His seven end zone targets are the fifth most in the NFL. He scored against Kansas City last week, and we didn't see L'Jarius Sneed shadow him, which I thought we might because he shadowed a lot of receivers this season. He actually was on Jerry Jeudy for 43% of his routes, not Sutton. So if that continues, the matchup's actually better for Sutton. And he leads the team pretty comfortably in terms of target share against man coverage at 29%. And target share against the blitz at 24%. The Chiefs play man defense 38% of the time, the fourth highest rate in the league. They're also top seven in percentage of plays where they blitz. So if Sneed isn't following Sutton once again, it's actually a pretty solid matchup. And if that's the case, then he's probably on Jerry Jeudy, who I have no interest in starting right now. Bengals and San Fran, Joe Burrow on the QB1, QB2 borderline, looked better before the bye. And saw a report that the Bengals have been practicing under center in practice, which is probably a good sign that Burrow's healthier because they were not playing from under center when he was active because he didn't have the mobility. He's pretty much operated out of the shotgun like 96% of the time. So that might be a sign that he's healthier. Matchup isn't ideal. So he's like a high-end quarterback too for me. You don't love the production, but you love the volume from Joe Mixon. He's played 74% of the snaps. And he's handled 83% of the Bengals' rushing attempts so far this season. 19 touches per game. Yes, the efficiency has been terrible, but it's hard to bench somebody getting upwards of 20 touches. You're starting Ja'Marr Chase, 30% target share. His usage this year has been different, but it's been good for fantasy as of late because he's playing in the slot about 25% of the time, one of the highest rate of his career. He's killed zone coverage too. 36% target share against zone. San Fran plays mostly zone defense, and we just saw Jordan Addison torch this defense. San Fran also allowing the fifth most receptions and targets per game to opposing wide receivers. T. Higgins is a low-end wide receiver 2, high-end wide receiver 3. We've hardly seen him healthy this season. You know, he was limited last in week 6 because when he's not 100%, the Bengals limit him. That's just what they do. So hopefully after the bye, he's 100% healthy, and then I'm not starting Irv Smith. For San Fran, we'll see if it's Brock Purdy under center. In the concussion protocol, did practice on Thursday, but he obviously has to clear it. If Purdy plays, he's a mid-range quarterback too. Just hasn't looked the same without Trent Williams and without Deebo Samuel. And if he's obviously out, it'll be Sam Darnold under center for San Fran. McCaffrey, despite leaving week 6 with the oblique, not only just played in week 7, but played 100% of snaps. He had 75% of team's rushing attempts, scored 2 touchdowns. And now he gets the Bengals, who are allowing a league-high 2.65 yards before contact per attempt. 15.9% of the runs against the Bengals have gained 10-plus yards, the highest rate in the NFL. McCaffrey has seen a carry or a target on 38.3% of snaps, second-highest rate in the NFL. Could be a vintage CMC game this weekend. Then with Deebo Samuel out, starting Brandon Ayuk, tough matchup. The Bengals have been really good against perimeter wide receivers, but I trust Brandon Ayuk's ability to get open against anybody. It was frustrating that he kind of disappeared in the second half last week, but I'm still trusting him as a strong wide receiver too. And you're starting George Kittle. I was very happy to see George Kittle. I was a little bit worried with Trent Williams out that the team would ask him to pass block more, but he still ran around on like 80% of dropbacks, caught 5 of 7 targets, and he faces the Bengals, who have been bad against tight ends, fourth most fantasy points per game to the position at 14.3. Two games left, Bears and Chargers. For the Bears, I mean, Tyson Bagent, first career start last week, wasn't asked to do much. He had a 2.5-yard ADOT. 31% of his pass attempts were behind the line of scrimmage. 9 of his 29 pass attempts came off screens. Like, it was a very, 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 very conservative approach. Probably the same thing this time around. Maybe more opportunities to take some shots down the field against the Chargers, who allow the most yards per completion and pass attempt this season. But he's, you know, nothing more than a, you know, fill-in for a QB2 in Superflex leagues. Dante Foreman has kind of dominated the backfield as of late, averaging 17.5 touches per game over the past 2 weeks. Scored 3 touchdowns last week. And like with the Bears not wanting to throw the ball down the field, we could see the running backs continue to see a lot of work in the passing game. So far this season, running backs have handled 24.4% of the Bears' targets. It's the third highest rate in the league. Roshon Johnson will be back for this game though, so it probably caps both running backs as flex plays. I would still lean Foreman, and I would bet Roshon Johnson plays the third downs at the very least that we've seen Darrington Evans play over the past couple weeks. DJ Moore is still, you know, a solid wide receiver too, volume based. Again, 31% target share with Bagent under center last week. He had 3 targets off screens. Everything is short. He's been under 60 yards in back-to-back games, but he should, you know, he has 44% of the team's receiving yards this season, third highest rate in the league. So if this team throws for 200 passing yards, I mean, DJ Moore is probably going to get, you know, at least 75 to 80, I would guess. And then for the Chargers, I'm starting Justin Herbert. Eckler's been disappointing the last couple weeks, but he's still averaging 16.5 touches per game. You know, the Bears allow the most yards per reception and the most receiving yards per game to running backs this season, so it's a good spot for Eckler. Keenan Allen, Herbert missed him again on a wide-open touchdown last week, or else it would have been yet one more fantastic game from Keenan Allen, but 31% target share, still starting him. And Joshua Palmer, I mean, since week 4 when Mike Williams has been out, 7.3 targets, 90 receiving yards per game, and a 27% target share. Like, I thought he would struggle against the Chiefs last week. That was not the case, so he remains a high-end wide receiver 3 for the time being. And the last game of the week, Monday Night Football, Las Vegas at Detroit. The efficiency has been bad for Josh Jacobs, but I don't know how you're benching anybody getting 21 touches per game. He leads the NFL in terms of percentage of snaps where he's seen either a carry or a target at 39.4%. Again, that leads the NFL. Tough matchup here. We know Gus Edwards had a huge game last week, but the Lions are still only allowing 13.2 fantasy points per game to opposing running back backfields, the fourth fewest in the league. Since week 9 of last year, only 4 running backs have reached 60 yards against the Lions. Luckily, though, Jacobs' volume is not going anywhere. He also has a 16.5% target share, second among all running backs behind Alvin Kamara. So he's still a high-end running back, too. Last week, Davante Adams was kind of frustrated about his role and lack of involvement. And right on cue, the Raiders, you know, they made an effort to get him involved early. He was targeted on all 4 of Hoyer's pass attempts in the opening drive and 3 more times on the team's second drive. He looked like he was on his way to like a massive game, but then the Raiders offense stalled in the second half and he finished with a middling 7 for 57 on 12 targets. He's been under 60 receiving yards and has not scored a touchdown in each of his last 3 games, but still has a 30% target share on the season. He's a wide receiver 1, wide receiver 2 borderline play. And Jacoby Myers, must-start player, scored again last week. 25% target share. Lions have been a pass funnel. 76% of the yards against him have come through the air. It's the fourth highest rate in the NFL. And Myers, I mean, nine targets inside the 10-yard line, tied for the most in the NFL with Devontae Adams. Tight end, like Michael Mayer is a borderline tight end one, tight end two. If you look at his overall snaps and everything, it looked like that role from week six came back down to earth, but it was mostly because he came out when the Raiders pulled their starters. He still dominated the snaps when the starters were in. And again, look, like I think his usage would be more, maybe not the targets and catches, but overall usage might be more, more like what we saw from week six when he played, when he ran around on a season high 70% of dropbacks. He's been, you know, separating himself from Austin Hooper. And in that game in week six, the Raiders, according to PFF, Michael Mayer was on the field for 70% of snaps into 11 personnel, which is a massive step forward. The Raiders still aren't using a ton of 12 personnel. They're like 25th in 12 personnel usage, but Mayer's taking those snaps when they are in 12 more than Austin Hooper was. So Lions, they've been terrible against tight ends. Second most fantasy points, fourth most receptions, and third most receiving touchdowns per game to the position. And for the Lions, I love Jared Goff here. He's just, again, been much better on home field. Since last season, he's played 12 games on the road, 12 at home. 21 fantasy points per game in Detroit compared to 13.1 per game elsewhere. Overall, Goff has still been really good. 6 in passing touchdowns, 8th in completion rate, 6 in passing touchdowns, and 12th in fantasy points per dropback. I am as a solid quarterback one. And then, yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs. I mean, one of the more polarizing players in fantasy, but with no David Montgomery last week, Gibbs had 68 yards on touchdown on 11 carries, had 9 catches for 58 yards on 10 targets, set season highs in snap share at 86% and rush share at 79%. In the two games where Montgomery has been out this season, Gibbs is now averaging 19 touches and 18.4 PPR points per game. And yeah, Montgomery probably doesn't play again this week, so Gibbs is a must-start player. So is Amon-Ra St. Brown, who has now set career highs in receptions and targets in each of the past 2 weeks. Over the past 2 weeks, during that span, he's caught 25 passes on 34 targets for over 200 yards and a touchdown. And Sam Laporta, who's starting him, second among all tight ends with a 23% target per route run rate. Actually, no, he's second among tight ends with a 21% target share, and his 23% target per route run rate is behind only Travis Kelce and TJ Hockenson. So, that will do it for week 8. A lot of games. I'm excited to have some bye weeks. I think 4 teams are on bye in week 9. So, and I think there's a lot of teams with a lot of really, really high-end fantasy options. So be on the lookout for that. Again, content-wise at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily. Basketball season, I mentioned, it's exciting. Basketball is such a fun sport, and I love our content. I love our tools, articles, projections, streams, everything. So make sure you're checking that out if you're high on basketball and love the sport and love to play fantasy basketball and DFS. Our coverage and our content is really, really top-notch. So, but other than that, have a great weekend. This has been the FTN DataCast presented by FTN Fantasy. We'll be back next week to break down the Week 9 slate as we are already cruising through this season here in 2023. Best of luck in week number 8. Have a great weekend. For the FTN DataCast, I'm Adam Pfeiffer. We'll talk to you then. Peace out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN DataCast with Adam Pfeiffer. Be sure to follow your host on Twitter at apfeiffer24. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you next time on the FTN DataCast, where data drives the discussion.